You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 188 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Justice League number 44, Justice League Odyssey number 20, Lois Lane number 10, Batwoman season 1 episode 19, A Secret Kept from All the Rest, Supergirl season 5 episode 18, The Missing Link, Flash season 6 episode 18, Pay the Piper, and Legends of Tomorrow season 5 episode 11, Ship Broken. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, coming up first for DC news. DC's flagship title, Batman, will be resuming its twice-monthly schedule June 9th when number 92 hits shelves. So we already knew it was coming back in June, but they didn't tell us it was going to be coming out twice monthly. So, which actually I think it had been for quite a while, hadn't it?
I think so. I don't think it ever stopped, right? I think Batman was one of the few ones that kept going.
Yeah.
And I mean, if anything, in theory, that should be sustainable because they've had time, right, to get more of it done.
Yeah.
In theory. I don't know. In practice, that might not be the case. But I would think in theory that at minimum, the scripts have to be done pretty far in advance, I would think.
I would think so. With that being the flagship title, you think they'd be on that one?
Yeah, I would think so.
All right, up next for DC News, the Dark Knight's Death Metal event is launching June 24th and has expanded to 7 issues, up one from its originally solicited 6 issues. DC also revealed that September will be a skip month for the event after the August 3 issues, Death Metal number 3 and the 2 one-shot companion specials. Death Metal Guidebook and Death Metal Legends of the Dark Knight number 1.
Part of me wonders if the expansion of the series was inevitable, because that seems to be what happens so often with event comics, but also wonder if part of it was just like Scott Snyder having extra time on his hands. Tinkering with the story, it just ended up making it longer.
Or he got to the 6th issue and realized, oh, shoot, I can't finish this in this issue.
Right, which is, I mean, we've seen that countless times in comics, so that wouldn't surprise me. But I do wonder if part of it might have been like, well, I can tinker with it, might as well.
That could very well be possible. All right, coming up in other DC news, and this was kind of sad, at least to me it was. DC's The Terrifics will conclude digitally with September's number 30th. The final print issue of The Terrifics will be number 27, scheduled for May 26th, and the final 3 issues conclude the series will be available only on digital platforms, including issues number 28, July 7th, issue number 29, which is August 4th, and issue number 30, which is September 1st.
I have to assume, at least in part, the series got really hurt by COVID. You know what I mean? Like, the lack of sales.
I
haven't seen the numbers, but I assume this was probably one of their lower selling titles to begin with, and this was probably just a death sentence for it. There was just no way it was going to bounce back from it.
Yeah, you're probably right on that. Love this series. Sad to see that it's going to be concluding.
Yeah, I agree. I really, I mean, I liked it. I liked the fact that it
I personally don't think at this point any of those characters can carry a title on their own for an ongoing. So I thought it was a great way to have four really good DC characters, you know, actually have a book and have something going on. But I liked it just as much as you did. So
yeah, and
I'm bummed. I'm not necessarily shocked. I honestly can't believe we got 30 issues of it. So.
And I won't be surprised if it comes back sometime in the future.
My hope is that while the title ends, the team itself does not disband. That's my hope, at least.
That would be cool. You know, we'd be able to see them in other stuff.
There's no reason for any of those characters for that status quo to change. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, Mr. Terrific is probably the most prominent of the four, I would say, but why wouldn't he still, like, the Terrifics were basically what I would personally expect his own stuff to be anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And Metamorpho, I mean, what else is he going to pop in for the most part? So I personally don't think there's any reason for them to disband the team itself, even though the title itself will be ending.
Yeah. All right, up next for DC News, longtime Flash writer Joshua Williamson, who has written the series since its relaunch in 2006, has announced he will conclude his run on the title with a story titled Finish Line. And Finish Line will follow the concurrent Legion of Zoom arc and will run from Flash 759 to 762. And it centers on Zoom taking over Barry Allen's body.
I mean, it's hard to argue. He's had a pretty influential run on the TV show, which is shocking to me, to be completely honest with you. I still am baffled how Bloodwork got into the show. But, I mean, as we'll talk about, Godspeed got in there, although I maintain that it is the costume that got that character.
That costume is awesome. In the pop.
Yeah. I personally think the artist deserves all of the credit for Godspeed. I'm not saying that he's not, I will say, I found him to be one of the more interesting things that Williamson did, but it's the costume. I really think the artist deserves the credit for that character. Yeah, I mean, I'm not particularly upset about it. I was very vocal about not enjoying a lot of his Flash books, so.
Yeah, you made that abundantly clear. All right, up next for DC News. Writer-artist Jeff Lemire has announced plans to revive his creator-owned series Sweet Tooth at DC. This announcement comes on the heels of Netflix's announcement of the cast of its Robert Downey Jr.-produced Sweet Tooth TV series. The original series ran for 40 issues from 2009 to 2013 through DC's Vertigo imprint, and reprints have been published under the Black Label.
I guess... It makes sense that Lemire would be bringing it back to go along with the show. I'm assuming that's the, like, 99% of the motivation there. Lemire's relationship with DC just is so confusing to me. Because it just seems like it fluctuates constantly on whether they're on the outs or not.
Yeah, and I don't know. All I know is I loved it when he was on the Terrifics.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of a lot of the stuff that he does. I knew of Sweet Tooth. I have not read it personally, though. Although I will say, for those that are interested, may not know this, because a lot of the stuff that he does for the bigger companies comes with an artist. He does actually draw, too. And Sweet Tooth is one of the ones he's drawn himself.
Oh, okay.
I didn't actually know this either. I got the chance to, when I was in Scotland studying, we went to a con that had no Marvel or DC presence, which is not surprising because it was overseas, but it did have Image like went all out. So this was Thought Bubble in Leeds, just in case anybody's curious. So at Thought Bubble, Image was like went all out. So Lemire was there for it, Scott Snyder was there, Jason Aaron, who does a ton of stuff for Marvel, obviously, as well as Image, was there. It was great, and I got him to sign one of the. At one point, DC was doing like these blank covers on top of, if you flipped it, the actual cover would be in there. But it made it great for like getting autographs or, you know, art or whatever. And Lemire, I just wanted him to sign it, to be honest with you. And he sketched Green Arrow on it for me.
Awesome.
Super, super nice of him. It was awesome because I was like, oh, I didn't know he, I'll be honest, I was ignorant. I was like, I didn't know he drew. I had to look it up afterwards.
All right. Next for DC News, an all-star cast including James McAvoy, Kat Dennings, Andy Serkis, Riz Ahmed, Michael Sheen, and Taron Egerton have been revealed for Audible's upcoming adaptation of DC's Sandman, and co-creator Neil Gaiman is on board as the narrator. Although the length of the Sandman audio serial is unknown, they have said it will adapt three storylines, Preludes and Nocturnes, The Dollhouse, and Dream Country. And Audible's Sandman series is scheduled to debut July 15th.
That's an unbelievable voice cast.
I know. That's what I thought when I was reading it.
Part of me wonders if they were able to finagle this with, like, you're at home, would you mind recording this for us?
That's
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, for an audiobook? Like, that's the kind of cast that you would expect for an actual adaptation, right?
Right.
Either movie or TV show, and it's just an audiobook, which is, that's, I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's working because I'm very intrigued in checking it out just because, like, that's some serious talent they got there.
Yes, it is. And you could very well be right about not having anything else to do. Why don't we record an audiobook?
Yeah, and obviously, you know, a few bags of cash thrown their way, but, you know, like, yeah. I can't, it's just, that's so, I don't know. And maybe it's just a matter of some of them were interested just because they're fans of the series. It's possible. I have no idea. That's just, I'm surprised at the level of high profile talent for an audiobook.
Yep. I was surprised when I saw that too. So I'm excited about that as well. All right. Up next for DC News, CW has acquired the rights to re-air DC Universe's Swamp Thing television show. The network purchased the rights to fill gaps in programming caused by COVID-19. Swamp Thing will air Tuesday at 8 p.m. this fall. Now, the CW president addressed if Swamp Thing could get a second season, and this is what he had to say. At the moment, it's just one season. I do not know if it would come back. Obviously, that would be a discussion for Warner Brothers and the CW. But at this time, Swamp Thing is just the episodes we have. I know I saw things flying across the internet when that news was announced. Everybody wondering if there's a second season coming, but there's what you have so far.
I do think that combination of that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure it's going to be on HBO Max too, right?
Swamp Thing?
Yeah.
I am not sure. I can't remember if we had seen news about that previously.
I can't imagine it wouldn't be. Under the assumption that it is, maybe it won't be. But the combination, at least one of the two, being on the CW gives it a far greater chance of getting renewed than it ever was otherwise. It would be, I still think it's an uphill battle, though, because as we learned from some of our podcasts, like those, I mean, it was just surprising. Those sets are gone.
Yeah.
So they'd have to effectively start, I'm assuming, from near scratch a lot of it. And I wouldn't be surprised. They probably would have to end up recasting that a bit, too.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. I mean, people, you know, get busy doing other stuff. They can't wait around forever.
Right.
But I honestly don't really see that happening. I think they just picked up the rights because they needed something to show on television.
Yeah, they absolutely need something. So, I'm excited for more people to see it. I think it does have a decent chance now because it will find a bigger audience than it. I mean, let's be honest, that there's no way that the number of people that watched it on DC Universe are going to even come close to the number that will be able to see it once CW starts airing it. And then on top of that, if HBO Max does indeed have it, which I assume it will, it's going to find a much bigger audience. I think it will greatly increase the odds of it potentially getting you know, picked back up.
My other thought on them showing Swamp Thing, we know that Justice League Dark is getting a live-action series on HBO Max. So Swamp Thing could be a potential character on that, so even if it's just cameo.
Well, they could, even because they had that, you know, an actual practical effect costume for it, they could, I feel like in a sense, it would almost be easier to just reuse that model, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be. One of the reasons I'm sure they did it is because they felt it looked better on screen than CGI, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. But then on top of that, I'm sure it also saved money in the long run, because you're not constantly needing to animate stuff.
Yeah.
Nearly to the degree. I'm sure there was still CGI involved, but you know what I mean? Not nearly to the degree that they would have. So I wouldn't shock me if Swamp Thing appears on it. I have to assume they still have that somewhere, right?
Yeah. So. You would think
that
so.
I don't think would have. Yeah, I can't see that getting destroyed. I mean, if nothing else, than for like any, you know, some sort of display. So I could see them reusing the character. If not necessarily the actor, I could see them reusing the character model.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, up next for DC News, the second season of Doom Patrol will debut June 25th on HBO Max and DC Universe. So we finally found out when that was coming back.
I'm very, very excited for season two of that show. I cannot wait.
I know. It's going to be awesome.
It's felt so long. I've been comforted knowing that we are getting a second season of it, which has made it better than when we were initially a little unsure.
Yep.
But man, it's been a while, right? I can't remember when the season stopped.
I can't remember either, but I think it's been over a year since it stopped. Because it was over before Swamp Thing started, and Swamp Thing started in May, if I remember right, last year.
I think you're right. Dang. Wow. I did not realize it had been that long.
And I'm guessing since season two is going to be on HBO Max, I'm assuming Doom Patrol season one will probably be on there also. It would only make sense.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, it's going to give the series a lot more exposure being on HBO Max.
Agreed. Although, I mean, it does, I feel like they've been using it a little bit as a selling point. So I think Warner Brothers actually has a lot of faith in the project, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? To use it as what I would assume to be a relatively, compared to the other stuff that they're using, like one of the other big things they're using to push HBO Max is the Friends reunion.
Yep.
Which that's, I can't think of a bigger audience than that. And when you're using, I'm not saying nearly to the extent, but Doom Patrol has been used as one of the like carrots on the stick, so to speak. And so that, to me, that demonstrates that they have a lot of faith in the show.
Yeah.
Which they should. I mean, it's phenomenal. I can't wait for more people to see it. It's so good.
All right. Up next for DC News, according to CW president and CEO Mark Pedowitz, Green Arrow and the Canaries is very much alive. And that's all I know about it. They haven't ruled it out yet.
It's weird that it's not. That's all it is, though, especially for CW. They don't usually play coy with this kind of stuff, you know? I can think of any of the other shows that have since sprung out from the Arrowverse. They're all like almost immediate pickups. Like Batwoman was very quickly like, yeah, it's getting a pilot. It's almost certainly going to go to series. And this one just kind of keeps hanging in limbo. So there, it, you know what I mean? It may end up working out. It may end up getting a season, but none of the other shows have had this.
No. And I'm wondering, they may be revamping it, trying to, you know, I don't know. I have a feeling that it's the backdoor pilot wasn't that popular.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and I can't help but wonder if, again, the fact that we're not going to be getting any, you know, shows for a while, that's going to end up hurting, honestly, it's going to end up hurting the show's chances. Because at that point, I mean, in one, I guess you could argue it two ways. I think the way I'm imagining it
is by the time they do get around to being able to shoot new shows again, other ideas will be on the table for CW. On the other hand, maybe it also gives them enough time to rework it into something CW wants to pick up. I don't know. So I guess it depends if you're a glass half full or half empty kind of guy.
And only time will tell.
Yeah.
All right, up next for DC News, Indy Navarrete has joined the cast of Superman and Lois as a series regular. She'll be playing Sarah Cushing's the daughter of Lana Lang, who is a new character not from the comic books. Her character is described as a whip-smart, super-cool, wild child with some demons in her past who becomes friends with the Kent boys, Jonathan and Jordan. Every time I see that the Kents have two sons, it just feels weird because I'm just used to Jonathan.
Yeah, it is weird. I don't disagree with you.
But I'm guessing Jonathan's going to be older than we've seen him in the comic books. I'm guessing both of them are going to be teenagers. How old was Jonathan in the comics? Wasn't he like 10 or something like that?
Is somewhere between 11 and 13, I usually interpreted it. Somewhere in that range.
He never felt 13 to me, but I could be wrong. Damien was older than him, wasn't he?
I thought they were the same age.
Maybe they are. And it always felt like Jonathan was younger.
I think they're the same age, but obviously Damien's been through way more. Relatively, comparatively, Jonathan has had a much more normal childhood, whereas Damien clearly did not. And so it doesn't surprise me that he frequently doesn't always act, you know, his age.
Right.
He's been through more stuff. He's also just a jerk. So
also news for Superman and Lois. Will Parks has been cast as the Stranger. And the Hollywood Trade describes the Stranger as a mysterious visitor hell-bent on providing to a world that no longer needs Superman. Do you think this is going to be their version of Phantom Stranger?
It would be really weird to cast somebody that close to, in name-wise, to Phantom Stranger and have it not be the Phantom Stranger.
That was my thoughts, too.
You know what I mean? Like, it's certainly possible, but be odd, I guess. Like, why not? Why not use Phantom Stranger? What else is he going to pop up in? Like, I mean, he was in Swamp Thing, but like we talked about, the chances of that mattering are pretty slim.
Yeah, I'm sure this is going to be a different version than we saw in Swamp Thing.
I actually didn't mind the Swamp Thing one. It was not, you know, it wasn't necessarily exactly what we would see in the comics, but also part of me wonders if they would have gotten there at some point and we never really got a chance to see it.
That's very much possible. All right, and the CW has also released a Superman and Lois poster and announced that the show will debut January 2021 and will run on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. after The Flash. All right, and for my last bit of DC news, I'm actually going to talk about the schedule for January 2021 because all the CW show premieres have been pushed back to January 2021. So, and unfortunately, we're not getting all of them. But here's what I know so far. Sunday at 8 o'clock, we're going to be getting Batwoman. Mondays at 9 p.m., we're going to be getting Black Lightning. Tuesday, we're going to be getting The Flash at 8, and then Superman and Lois at 9. Both Supergirl and Legends Tomorrow's are absent from the schedule and most likely be starting later on. So, I just thought
that's not surprising with Legends. That seems to be the status quo with that show anyway.
Yeah, but it seems odd for Supergirl not to be behind on right after Batwoman.
I agree with you. I still wonder, I mean, part of it, I wonder if part of that, Supergirl is going to end up being delayed for a while because their main character can't be in the show.
That is very true. I forgot she's pregnant. That could be very likely for the delay.
You know what I mean? It probably would have, I guess, at some, like, I can't remember. I don't remember when we knew for sure that she was pregnant, but
It was a.
I imagine she will be when we hit the point where they can actually start filming. I would imagine that is not going to be an ideal time for her to be wearing a Supergirl costume.
Probably not. All right. Well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for the comedy stylings of Hugh from the Borg Collective.
When I was part of the Borg Collective, my Borg wife was so fat, when she sat around the collective, she sat around the collective.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Justice League number 44. This issue opens up with an Atlantean outpost calling Atlantis for help as it's under attack from a monster. As one Atlantean put it, Neptune's balls. I thought that was odd to be in the comic. So the Justice League answers a call of help from Aquaman. The Justice League help battle against mythical monsters from Tartarus, and they start charging after Wonder Woman, and she leads them back into the pit where they're sealed back in. And then suddenly the Justice League members start arguing with each other. The Spectre shows up stating, "All shall receive the divine punishment of the Spectre." End issue. Me personally, I thought this was just an okay issue.
I honestly, that's pretty high praise for his comics. I didn't have that much wrong with it either, and that was sort of the thing. I was sat there, and I was like, this is probably, for me personally, about as good as it gets from him, and it was just a forgettable, average comic. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, I did think it was a little odd that the whole comic is about these Greek monsters, and then it's not even really about that. That seems pretty typical Vendetti to me, but that's just, it wasn't that, yeah, I don't know. And I'm curious to see what he's doing with the Spectre. I'll refrain any, you know, opinions until we see what his plan is with the character, but I did find it odd.
Yeah, I was wondering what was up with it too, but pretty much I just found, same as you, I found this to be an average comic, so. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League Odyssey number 20. The issue opens up with Jessica battling Azrael. Jessica is trying to save him, but Blackfire comes along and kills him, and Jessica is not happy about it.
Jessica does bounce back pretty quickly. I know that she's upset, but she's not upset for that long, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Jessica gets the idea to send a message back in time to warn Cyborg about Darkseid. We see that Cyborg gets the message too late, and then Cyborg warns Jessica that Darkseid is after Epoch's machine and wants to remake time into his own image. Surprise, surprise. And then when we get to towards the end of the issue, Darkseid shows up to take the machine.
I thought the time travel thing was a little underwhelming, I guess, maybe just because it didn't go the way I was thinking it would. Because it seemed to me when they introduced the idea of her going back in time, I was like, oh, that sort of makes sense. So then it turns into like a her undoing the entire situation, which is ultimately where I think this is going to go. Because this has gotten, from a status quo standpoint, the book has gotten so into such an absurd place with the characters that the only way to undo it is to literally just be like, it never happened.
Yeah.
And so I was surprised. I'm just being honest. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
None of the status quo of these characters is going to last outside of this book. And so I thought it was going to turn into like a time travel adventure with Jessica, not necessarily within just this issue, but like that's where the next few issues were going to go. And then when it was just basically like I caught your warning after it was way too late, but it did sort of help. I was like, oh, that was underwhelming.
So it does feel like this is heading towards a conclusion.
I agree. And I still don't totally discount the idea of time travel coming back into it. I assume that they are going to leave the status quo with Darkseid in some way, just, you know, keeping him as actual Darkseid.
Yeah.
But for the other characters, like you know that they're all going to have to bounce back somehow.
Yeah.
So
you're not going to keep Cyborg and Starfire and even Azrael as gods of Darkseid. So
I cannot believe that we found out for sure that the Terrifics is ending before this book. They may end up being ending around the same time and we just don't know it, but man, really? I can't believe this book has better legs.
And it might. They might just keep it going because of the title. With Justice,
it must be selling better. You know what I mean? It has to be. It's the only thing I can think of.
So, and that could just be because Justice League's in the title. I can tell you, back in the day when I used to collect Justice League, I got Justice League America, Justice League Europe, Justice League International. You know, if I had Justice League on it, I was collecting it. So,
I think there's a very, very valid argument to what you're saying there. I don't necessarily disagree with that.
So, I picked, back when I was collecting like that, I was picking up, when I was picking up the regular Justice League, I was picking up everything else too. Of course, back then I used to pick up all the Superman titles, all the Batman titles. Man, I used to spend a lot on comics. Which is probably why I have such a big collection. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Lois Lane number 10. This issue opens up with a lesson about the multiverse. Renee explains to Jessica why her head is a jumbled mess of different versions of herself. We see Superman visits Lois and has some potato chips. And Jessica Midnight uses her magic to switch out the kiss of death that is trying to kill Lois and gets shot herself. Honestly, Cletus, I was kind of underwhelmed by this issue compared to the other issues of Lois Lane we have. Not saying it was a bad issue, but it wasn't. I didn't find it that exciting.
No, I have to agree with you, and I maybe not necessarily underwhelming, but like, I feel like I've forgotten what the comic was supposed to be about in the first place. I don't know about you, it feels like we diverged at some point and went way off track on what she was supposed to be doing originally.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you on that.
She was writing a story, and it somehow has turned into something about the multiverse and an assassin killing her. Maybe I'm wrong, and I'm just not remembering the story clearly, but this was not what the story was originally.
Yeah, and I can't argue with you because I can't remember either. I'd have to go back and reread the miniseries to find out what they was focusing on.
It is definitely more what's weird to me is that I feel like it's been more like an ongoing series is the way it's read to me personally, where it's sort of introducing like this arc with the assassin makes sense if it's, you know, issue whatever, I think it started maybe around seven or eight, you know, issues eight to 10, that being a mini arc and an ongoing, that totally makes sense. Because that's what it feels like. It feels like a diversion rather than what has been effectively almost half of a 12-issue story. Because what's the ending of this going to be? If the ending is just them beating the assassin, I'm going to be like, what the hell was the point of the series?
Yeah, and it's already, we only got two issues left.
I'm trying to figure out where the ending's going to go. Obviously, the assassin's going to get taken down. I'm not worried about that. But you know what I mean? Like, what, to me, I feel like the ending's going to determine what ultimately the series was even about. Obviously, it's about Lois doing reporting, but reporting about what exactly? It's just been sort of, I don't know. It's felt sort of nebulous to me what her goal is. And I've enjoyed most of the issues with this, and I didn't necessarily hate this one either, but when I finished it, I definitely found myself asking when I finished the comic, what is the story that I'm reading with this book?
Yeah, and I'm wondering the same thing. I'm wondering where it's going, because it felt like it's not what it would be, what it started out as. We had, at the beginning of this miniseries, we had a lot of focus on Lois cheating on Clark, kind of hints in it too. So, and that's gone away, obviously, because of the reveal. But I'm not even sure if that's been revealed in this miniseries yet.
I think it was. It was sort of, I do think that this series suffered because of that, the status quo change and what Bendis is doing. Because it was very clearly focusing on that, like, pseudo other woman aspect of their relationship, even though obviously that wasn't actually the case. And then it just went away. They never addressed the fact that he revealed his identity. But the status quo changed. Like, she's not dealing with what she was dealing with at the beginning of the book. It just goes away. It just is just never fully explained within this comic.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, hopefully the last two issues kind of focus the, or, you know, refocus what the story is about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like right now it's going to end up wrapping up this assassin story, which is fine. I mean, it's not that I've disliked that story, but that feels like it's going to me, I feel like this book is going to ultimately feel like a ongoing series that got canceled at issue 12 rather than having just finished a 12 issue story. It doesn't feel to me like we're on the home stretch of a run like when we were reading Mr. Miracle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When we were reading Mr. Miracle, it felt like we were reaching the tail end of an ongoing story. And other miniseries that we've read, that's just a 12-issue one that I can think of. And this one just doesn't – it personally, to me, doesn't feel that way.
Right. And White Knight did the same thing. It came to a conclusion.
Even right, and that, I mean, both White Knights were clear narrative arcs in both of them. Even if you bunch the two of them together to make, what would it be, a 14, 16-issue arc, both of them, there are two clear arcs in those stories. Whereas this one, I feel like, was about one thing. And then I think something changed, and it sort of became about something else. And maybe that was the point. Was that her investigation was about one thing and she stumbled onto something else. But I will admit, maybe I'm not reading it closely enough, but I feel like that wasn't communicated well enough, if that's the case.
All right. Well, I guess time will tell what happens here. All right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
You have 30 seconds to describe Thunder Talk.
It's pop culture.
With a twist.
It's music.
LGBTQ+.
And comedy.
Well, dark comedy.
It's nerd junk.
It's comic books.
Video games.
Conventions.
Yeah, nerd junk.
And social commentary.
It's woke, yo.
Yeah, and nerd junk.
Woke nerd junk.
Thunder Talk is all over the place.
Every place you want to be.
Thunder Talk is a proud member of the ESO Network. Find us at thundertalk.org and download us on all podcast platforms.
And we're back. Let's talk Batwoman season 1 episode 19, A Secret Kept from All the Rest. In this episode, Alice wants revenge on Batwoman. She's desperate to decode Lucius Fox's journal and learn its secrets. Did you notice she stated she wanted to kill Batwoman but did not call her Kate? I'm wondering if she's starting to think of Batwoman and Kate as two separate people. If you ask me, her plan to kill Batwoman is kind of dumb. Why do you need to waste time trying to decode a journal and find a way to kill Batwoman if you know Kate is Batwoman? You could very easily go after Kate when she's not wearing the costume. Her obsession with Batwoman is driving her to make dumb decisions, in my opinion. We see that Mouse is upset with her for destroying what they had going on at Arkham, and he actually was happy pretending to be the Doctor.
He's not wrong. They have it relatively great there.
Yeah.
There's no reason, there's no real reason other than her own manic need for revenge for them to leave. They have the perfect setup. They're protected. They have a shelter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have a shelter. They have a great life. Even though she's technically a prisoner, she's not really, because the person in charge is Mouse. Yeah. I mean, so he is 100% in the right in that argument.
Now, what do you think of my opinion of Alice thinking of Batwoman and Kate as two separate people? Do you think that's true, or do you have a different opinion on that?
No, I actually think you're onto something with that. I wonder if it's intentional, whether the show is thinking it through or not. And if it is intentional that the show is trying to show her viewing the two differently, I think you're onto something, because, I mean, she is crazy, right?
Right.
And the show has been surprisingly open and not just having the mental illness be just a blanket craziness. Like, there have been a couple times where she's had, some sort of doctor or psychologist specifically try and diagnose something or give a specific recommendation. And I do think that there could be something there where she's sort of refocusing her trauma on a new target, and it's Batwoman, because that's easier for her to view as a nemesis, because, it helps her separate her feelings of betrayal from her, clearly her feelings of still caring for her sister. It allows her mentally to keep them separate.
Yeah. Now, Alice texts Tommy Ellett with bringing her different people in hopes that they can unlock Lucius's code. And when they fail, she fries them in that electric chair. We see Tommy become Hush in this episode, and he has no problem killing people. He eventually captures Luke and Julia Pennyworth. We also see Kate track down Regan, where she learns that she's Magpie's sister. Kate also learns that Julia paid a visit to Regan with very shady intentions. This leads to Kate and Luke having a fight about Julia's intentions, and we later learn that Julia is working for Safaya Sohail. Kate didn't recognize her name, but I remember her from when we were reading Batwoman comics at the beginning of Rebirth. She was another one of Kate's exes from when she traveled the world after her military school, but before becoming Batwoman. And I'm curious to learn what Sophia's relationship with Kate will be on the show. Will they have crossed paths some point in the past, and maybe Kate knew her under a different name? I'm just curious where they're going to go with that.
I am too. I am assuming that this is the same woman that's after Alice.
Yeah.
Is my assumption. I don't know if the show confirmed that or not, but I have personally been working off the assumption that's the same person.
Yeah, and that's my guess as well. I don't remember the show confirming it either, but I'm sure we're going to find that out very soon.
Or next year.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever the case may be.
Yeah, or next year. Maybe it'll be a long time from now.
This was the finale, right?
No, we still got one more episode.
Oh, do we?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because it felt like the sort of, this is the best we can do finale.
Yeah, the finale is probably going to start here in about 4 minutes.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I have to say, because I honestly was going to compliment them in a sense. I mean, I wasn't crazy about it, but I was like, it still has the, it's a makeshift finale in some ways. It has some cliffhangers.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
One thing I didn't like at the end of the episode was Jacob Kane declaring war on Batwoman. I don't know. I'm just not that interested in that storyline. And I thought we were kind of past this, but they're bringing it back again.
We've also done this. We've done this with Arrow. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't need to retread. I know it's not at the same show, but I don't need to retread that ground.
I agree with you.
The thing I thought was the dumbest thing, and I agreed with you, mentioned it at the beginning of our summary here. What is this stupid, the plan to kill Batwoman? You just kill her. You don't need kryptonite. What the hell is this plot, Drew?
Yeah.
I'm so baffled by this. Everybody is after this secret code, secret thing, the secret to killing Batwoman / Batman, whichever one. What? They're just a person. You just killed them. There's no secret weakness.
I was wondering what the kryptonite was about. I was like, is this suit some sort of Kryptonian technology or something? But even if it was,
how is that a secret? How is that the secret way to kill Batman?
I don't know.
/ Batwoman. I'm so confused by this plot. It's like the show suddenly forgot who the main character was. It was like the writers of Supergirl accidentally wandered into the wrong room, wrote the episode. And they're like, oh, crap, it's Batwoman. Well, I just changed the names of the characters. It'll be fine.
Oh, man. I know what you mean. I didn't know what kryptonite was doing on here either. I was like...
But even before they revealed it was kryptonite, honestly, that it's stupid. But even before that, just the mere fact that they were like obsessing over finding whatever this secret key to killing Batwoman was, I was like... If you know, Alice, of all people, you know that she is just a woman, you just kill her. You get her in a situation where she can't defend herself properly, and you kill her. You can use a knife. You could drown her. You could use a gun. You can. I guess I understand. I don't understand.
So we're getting my rant earlier with your rant closing out the episode here.
I'm really glad that you mentioned it too, because I was watching the episode and I was like, what are they talking about? What? Why do you need a secret to kill? I don't understand. I do not understand. And it was so important that Lucius Fox had to write it down
in code
instead of just keeping it him to himself. First off, that didn't make sense. But then Luke sees it and also immediately agrees that there's no way he could possibly tell anybody about that secret. What could that secret possibly be, Drew? I obviously need to see the next episode because I was baffled. I also wanted to add on top of that, that I thought Hush looked very much like Hush. So compliments there.
Oh, yes.
But also, like... Good Lord, could they have had him standing with his arms straight out with the guns more free? Like, any excuse they could possibly have had for him to hold both guns out. Any instance he was there, two guns blazing. And it was like, guys, just because he's drawn that way in like two panels does not mean that he needs to be constantly walking arms out with the guns. Good Lord.
I did take notice of that too.
Again, I want to say the costume design spot on, very well done. It got to the point where it was absurd. Like, nobody stands that much with that pose. It was, they were clearly trying to be like, hey, look, it's Hush. Hey, look, it looks like Hush. I'm like, yeah, I get it. He's Hush, all right.
And also their use of Hush every time he does. Come up on people.
That was so ham-fisted. This whole Hush arc has been like just the most ham-fisted is the best way I can think to describe it. It is the most inelegant, least subtle way they could have possibly done Hush.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Supergirl, Season 5, Episode 18, The Missing Link. Brainiac has figured out that Lex was the one that released the Sun Eater and is endangering his friends in the process. Lex reminds him that it is all part of the process to get Gemma to trust him. Next, he plans on presenting her with the weapon that he stole from the Fortress of Solitude to get invite to the Leviathan ship. Now, Kara and the rest of the supers are having problems locating Leviathan without the DEO's resources. And they turn to Kelly's military buddy Pete, played by Sean Astin, to help them locate Ramakan. I gotta say, I was happy to see Sean Astin in this. And I also have to say, the writers have been watching The Incredibles because they're calling them supers. Maybe they need to rewatch The Flash because we call them metahumans here.
I have to say, to me, that terminology they've been using it's almost to give it the Supergirl's team an inflated sense of importance, if I'm being honest with you. Because if you're calling them supers, it makes it sound like this is this world-beating team. And I would argue it's not, personally. But apart from Supergirl, obviously Supergirl is. But, like they frequently include Alex in that group. And I'm sorry, but, like, come on.
So we also see Kelly and William do some detective work on their own and discover that Eve Tessmacher is working for Leviathan. When Kelly brings this before Andrea, she's told to drop it or be fired. And we see that William follows Eve anyways and gets a bag thrown over his head and captured. And doesn't look like we're going to see anything more from him until next episode. We also see Dreamer is able to locate Ramakan, and Supergirl, Dreamer, John, and Magan are able to stop Ramakan from unleashing an earthquake. We got a cool battle scene. And we got to see the Martians in their true form. And this is shortly after John gives this big old explanation that he loves staying in his human form while he's in costume now. Did you notice that?
I did. I did think that was – it was so funny because I was like, you clearly are throwing in this line to justify budgetary reasons. And I get it. I totally understand why you have him in human form all the time. And honestly, him wearing the costume is a compromise I'm willing to accept. Because I know that you can't clearly are not able to afford him being Martian Manhunter all the time. And so I will take at least getting him in costume. But then to have that BS explanation and then go, yeah, but we're going to do it anyway. It's like, okay.
I know, it's just funny. But that just tells me we're going to be seeing him more in costume in his human form, which I have no problem with either. So,
yeah, well, I mean, they pretty strongly hinted at that. I think it was in... Was it at the end of Crisis or was it the first episode back with Supergirl? One of the two, they pretty strongly hinted that that was going to be the new status quo for him.
Which I'm fine with because I get tired of seeing plainclothes John all the time and hardly any Martian Manhunter. So.
Like I said, to me, that's a compromise that I can accept. You know what I mean? Like at least we get the costume, which is – it's a good costume. So – yeah, I can accept that. I still, going off of the Martian Manhunter thing though, man, it's so weird to me. I still can't. Him and Miss Martian just feels icky.
Yeah, because we did get that kiss scene this episode with them.
Yeah, and it was like watching Batman and Robin make out.
Oh no. Okay.
I'm sorry, but that's what it is. They in the comics, that is like an uncle niece
relationship
situation.
Yeah.
I know that that's not what they are, but that's how it's treated. It's treated as like a very familial connection between them.
All right, let's move.
I'm sorry, but imagine a live action adaptation where Bruce and Tim just start macking on each other, like.
Okay, let's move on. We find out that Ramakan allowed himself to be captured so he could be taken to the DEO, where he finds and steals kryptonite. Now, while the supers are dealing with Leviathan, Lex and Lena are at the prison where Lena's experiment fails. We see a riot break out. Lena and Lex get into a huge fight, and that's because she realized Lex really hasn't changed. We see Lex go ballistic on her with rage. And then Lita states that she doesn't have to be a monster like him. And Lex and Lena part ways. And then, of course, Lex blows up the prison. At the end of the episode, we see Lena goes to Kara. And she doesn't expect Kara to forgive her, but she begs Kara to work with her to stop Lex and Leviathan from using her project for true evil.
I had one. So one question I had, because I legitimately can't remember. Did we see Ramakan pop back up post-crisis?
I don't remember seeing him post-crisis. All I remember is him pre-crisis.
See, okay, because that was really confusing to me, because the interactions between, especially for him, and I couldn't tell if the team knew about him or not. That seemed a little bit more gray to me. But he definitely seemed to remember fighting and failing. But I thought that was pre-crisis. And yeah, so why would his...
Yeah, I don't remember a fight between them post-crisis. I only remember pre-crisis. And it's...
Or are they insinuating that it still happened?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Like, in the rewritten timeline, it had happened in the past still, and that hadn't changed. Like, I don't know if many people were thinking about that, but I personally was... It didn't necessarily distract from the episode for me, but I was confused by that, because I was like, wait, do they still know who he is? Did all of that happen?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's hard for me to watch him as Ramakan, because I keep thinking he's the colonel from Stargate Atlantis who's piloting the ship back and forth between Earth and the Pegasus galaxy. So,
I think it's interesting because, honestly, surprisingly, I feel like Supergirl's the one that's gone the most with the terms of coming to terms with the ramifications of crisis, which is not what I would have expected. I would have definitely thought it'd be Flash.
Yeah.
But it's clearly been Supergirl has by far dealt the most with crisis. And they do. And unfortunately, I think because they talk about it so much and work it into the plot, which I think is a good thing. It does open it to more questions of you end up looking at things going like, wait, do they know about that or not? So I don't know. I've had that a few times. I've had it more with Supergirl than with the other shows about being confused about what has or hasn't happened.
All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Flash, Season 6, Episode 18, Pay the Piper. This episode opens up with Barry going to Joe and letting him know what happened to Iris. After that, we see Barry returns to Star Labs and lets everybody know what's going on. Barry and Sisko argue, but Cecile puts the team together and the team kind of divides up and starts investigating. But what I thought was weird was... They said they were all going to go investigate, but that didn't really happen. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Okay, then we get into the really weird thing. Godspeed shows up at Star Labs and attacks Barry. Looked like he was trying to siphon off Barry's power, and Nashville hits him with a pulse gun, and then Godspeed states this isn't over and leaves. It felt like Godspeed came out of nowhere. And then while I was doing my notes for this episode, I had forgotten that way back in the fall, when The Flash kicked off its sixth season, Barry was chasing Godspeed around Central City. When he eventually caught up with the White Speedster and discovered it wasn't the real Godspeed, but a speechless drone that emitted some annoying sound. And according to Sisko, that was the fourth one they had encountered. And then that was the end of that. We hadn't seen Godspeed since. I had forgotten all about that. Because when I watched this episode, I was freaking confused. I was like, oh man, we're missing some sort of episode or something. This episode of The Flash felt choppy to me. I don't know about you.
I think that they did intend to bring this back. I do think Godspeed was intended to come back at some point, because they seem to be hinting at what they had at least originally at some point planned for the next season to be. That's what I felt like. It felt like they were laying what was supposed to be the seeds for the next season, which would be some weird potential team of speedsters from the future. The thing that I was having trouble remembering was what the TV version of Godspeed was all about in the first place.
I
can't remember what his deal was.
He was in the future. I remember that. When Barry went to the
future. Yeah, wasn't he a Velocity 8 guy? Or am I wrong?
I can't remember.
I was thinking he was an artificial speed guy.
He might have been. I noticed in this episode, and I can't remember from last season, but this episode showed him with white lightning, which I thought was kind of weird with his white suit.
I think he had that. I'm pretty sure that's consistent, okay. I think. I think he's had that.
Yeah, so I remembered him. I will say I remembered that he had been in the season earlier because my girlfriend was confused like you were. She was like, I don't remember. Am I supposed to know him? And I was like, oh, he had popped up earlier this season, but I couldn't remember. I was trying to explain what he was about, and all I could remember was the comic. And I was like, he's not like the comic, though. The only thing they adapted was the costume.
Which is awesome, by the way.
I really think that's the only reason that character stuck around, because that costume is freaking cool. And I think that's the same reason they keep reusing him again on the show. They're like, man, that costume is so cool. We ought to use that thing again somehow.
So because Godspeed's using vibrations and sound, was able to, try to take Barry's speed, they turn to Hartley Rathaway, a.k.a. Pied Piper. Hartley hates Flash because in the new post-crisis timeline, Barry accidentally injured Hartley's right-hand man, Roderick, while trying to defend himself during their season one bridge fight. And since that tragic night, Roderick had been in Mercury Labs because his molecules were destabilized. And of course, we find out Pied Piper's, so upset about it is because it was basically his boyfriend.
I gotta say that I thought it was a little silly that they were playing it like Barry solved the case when he was like, I figured it out. You actually care a lot for him. And it was like, no crap. Are you kidding? What? I didn't realize that it was meant to be like a surprise that he was actually dating that guy. I was like, wait, that was, why the hell would he care if one of his henchmen got hit by that? I don't know. I thought that was really weird that the show tried to play this as like a, whoa, they like each other. I was like, well, yes, obviously. Why would Hartley be this upset about some dude that worked for him?
Yeah, it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, but it was obvious to the point where it was like, I'm not saying it was obvious and like we're clever for figuring it out. It was obvious as in like, why was that being played as a mystery?
I have no
clue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to take any credit for that. I'm pretty sure anybody with two eyeballs watching the show have figured out long before the other characters on the show that those two were together.
So
especially if you know anything, I can't remember if they had established Hartley as gay on the show before. I think they did, right?
If they did, I don't remember.
Okay, well, but he definitely is in the comics. In fact, he's actually dating Singh. I thought that's where they were going to go initially with the episode when they mentioned Singh was missing, and then they end up referencing Pied Piper. I was like, oh, interesting. They're going to end up going with that route. And then they didn't. I was like, oh, that was a weird coincidence.
So Barry convinces Hartley to help him battle against Godspeed, and Team Flash is able to fix Roderick. I thought we got a pretty cool battle scene with Flash and Godspeed, too, with them zooming all over the city. I thought that was pretty cool. And then Barry and Pied Piper working together to stop him. I like that.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I will say the only thing I thought was odd is that they seem to be very, like, inconsistent, I guess is the way to put it, in terms of Barry's remaining speed.
Yeah.
Like, he barely has enough to do something sometimes, and then he had enough for Godspeed twice siphons. Maybe not, it's not that much, but two separate times he siphons some speed off of Barry. And then Barry then goes and runs all around the city and throws lightning. For what we thought was a limited well of Speed Force, there's quite a bit left.
I got to be honest with you. I thought this was their fight was actually going to end with Barry having no speed anymore.
I thought so too. And then it was just sort of like, yeah, he's still got some. And it's like, well, why the hell has this thing been red the whole time? Frankly, his watch should have been green for half of these episodes if that's the case.
No kidding. So in the mirror verse, Iris also faces a crisis of confidence because she can't believe Eva managed to trick her. Thankfully, Iris reunites with a real Camille and who pushes Iris to forgive herself because it's their only chance of finding a way out. And then, of course, we find out that the Godspeed Barry and Hartley fought isn't the real one either. When Barry took Godspeed to Iron Heights, he told Barry that the one who sent him wants infinite velocity before it started chirping like the other drones they encountered.
I wonder, is this leading to another Thon story? Is this leading?
I don't know.
It feels like we're getting a callback of another speedster to me. My gut tells me it's not a new one, but maybe I'm wrong.
Wasn't it Zoom that used velocity?
Yeah. Zoom was the first one that used Velocity 8, but I could have sworn that was also what Godspeed was doing, too.
If this season didn't get truncated, I have a feeling we're going to see more with Godspeed and what was going on with that. I could be wrong, but I don't know. I just had a feeling that maybe we missed out on something we were supposed to learn.
Well, and remember, they had said something with the Flash that there was some sort of cliffhanger they were planning on doing that isn't happening now, obviously. So I wonder if that was it. I still wonder if it was tied to Bloodwork.
That could be.
Because they clearly were hinting at something happening with Bloodwork at some point.
Yeah, maybe.
And I doubt that that's going to happen.
Yeah,
hopefully. And that gets scrapped completely. I wouldn't be upset. One thing, I don't know if you saw this, Drew, article or not, but I was reading, one of the showrunners was talking about that they had already, obviously, what's going to be their finale was already filmed when they got shut down, and they had already filmed like 90% of the next episode, and that as it stands right now, that's going to end up being their season premiere next year.
Okay. I hope it doesn't end up being like the Titans.
I think there's a chance it might be a little like the Titans. I will say, though, because remember, it would have been episode 20, and I think they have 22, 23 episodes. So it's possible that it would be somewhat like Titans, but less in that just one episode and more of like a 3-episode arc to wrap that arc up.
Okay.
It's also possible that they decide to just rework it entirely and make that the full season.
Oh, that
or at least the first half, I should say the first half of the season.
That'd be interesting.
I wouldn't be totally that upset about I have no idea. I'm assuming that Mirror Master does not get defeated in the finale. Wouldn't you? I mean, I could be wrong because from what it seems like, they didn't change much, if anything, with this episode to make it a finale.
No,
so I can't imagine that Mirror Master would have gotten beat 3 episodes before the end, right?
Yeah.
So I assume that Mirror Master will pop up again next season, and so I wouldn't really honestly be that upset if she ends up being a half season villain, because it would give her I think personally half a season to actually be the villain, because she really was kind of on the sidelines for most of it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. She was.
So. It wouldn't feel like the first and second half of Cicada, where Cicada was just fully present the whole time. It would feel what I thought they should have done with Cicada, which was it was a lot of off-screen stuff. In regards to Mirror Master, she was off-screen most of the time, and then it was really only right towards the end that you realized what she was really up to.
Well, we got one more episode of The Flash, so I'm excited to see where it ends. All right, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Legends Tomorrow, Season 5, Episode 11, Ship Broken. So, this episode begins with Mick still trying to reconcile with his daughter, Lita. And He's allowed to have her for the weekend, but we see that Lita's not interested. At least that's until Mick shows her the Wave Rider. I thought that was an awesome way to get her attention.
Yeah, that was great.
So Gary brings his emotional support dog aboard the Wave Rider and gets grief from the crew. And I found it very hilarious when his dog puddled on the floor and Constantine stepped in it. I thought that's freaking hilarious. We see Charlie tries to use the Loom of Fate to bring Brad Beer. I can never pronounce his name. Berad, Behad, or Berad.
Berad, I think it's Berad. I don't know.
Charlie tries.
What's confusing is that the different characters pronounce it differently. She obviously, I'm assuming, pronounces it correctly. But then some of the other actors who probably don't speak multiple languages like she does do not seem to pronounce it the same way.
But anyways, Charlie tries to use the Loom of Fate rings to bring him back, and it backfires, and we see the ship get disabled. The rings of fate, I'm calling them the Rings of Fate. The Rings of Fate are stolen, and Astra gets blamed for it. But of course, later on, we find out that the Rings of Fate ended up getting flushed down the toilet, and I can't even remember which one of the crew did it. Sarah wakes up from her coma from last episode and is blind. She begins having visions when she touches people, and she's having visions of their murders. Sarah is somehow now able to see the future. It is soon discovered that the ship breaking down was actually sabotage, and we see Zari is able to bring up footage of the crew sabotaging the ship, but none of them remember it. But in each scene, Gary's dog is in the picture barking orders. And Gary revealed that he rescued his dog from hell. And we also learned that Gary Jr. is the son of Sam's dog. So the dog reveals its true self, and we see it transform into a hell dog and goes after Mick's daughter. And Mick is able to save his daughter with the help of Sarah, using her badass fighting skills, even blind. I thought that was cool. And Constantine sends the dog back to hell. Gary fishes the rings of the loom out of the toilets. And, of course, has a new support bunny, Gary Jr. 2. And then with Gideon back at full capacity, Ava takes Sarah to the medical bay to get her eyes fixed. And Gideon states there's nothing wrong with Sarah. And her blindness continues. This, out of all the series having truncated seasons, this series seems to feel the most unaffected by that. At least this episode did to me.
I agree, but also part of me wonders if it's going to have the, in a sense, worst finale, if that makes sense.
Yep,
because it seems I don't mean in terms of quality, but in terms of wrapping up the story, I feel like because Legends is a shorter show, there's a lot less. I feel like there's usually fewer filler episodes. There's still some, but each episode tends to matter just a little bit more in terms of the overall plot. I can't help but feel like it ending early is going to feel more of a jolt than the other ones, because the other ones have had, you know, 18 episodes prior to build towards at least close to the climax. Whereas I think Legends wasn't nearly as close to the end. I could be wrong.
This is episode 11.
And I don't remember. I will admit, I do not know how long the season was supposed to be for Legends, but probably more than 13, right?
So probably. And we're only going to get 12, so.
Yeah, I agree. It is. I do still think there was one. Which was the episode we felt there was something off?
That was last episode.
Last episode, we thought there was something off that maybe they cut, but maybe they didn't cut it, and maybe it was just the weird nature of the episode itself.
Well, we thought there was supposed to be some sort of Egypt episode, remember?
Yeah. Maybe there wasn't.
So.
I still think there was. I don't know.
Still,
One thing I was frustrated initially in this episode that I was glad that they didn't keep going with was Sarah's refusal to tell them what she was seeing. I was like, what are we doing? Come on. I was getting really frustrated. I was like, this is just stupid. Why would you not share this information? I was glad that they cut that short relatively soon within the episode.
But I really enjoyed this episode. Honestly.
Yeah, I agree. It had that perfect Legends mix, right?
Yeah.
Some really, really funny scenes. You know, just the whole plot with Gary adopting a dog.
And I'm finally glad we're moving this Mick daughter story along too. So I was happy that moved forward too.
Yeah, I totally agree. Especially after the way it had gotten cut off kind of weirdly before that.
Yep.
Very glad we got to see some, like you said, actual progress, some forward momentum in regards to that story.
All right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
All right, so since we've mentioned the costume numerous times in this podcast and how cool it is, I am going to I'm going to butcher this last name. Usually, I let Drew do it for me, but I couldn't. Drew was the one that reminded me what issue he popped up in. It was the first issue in Rebirth, Flash Rebirth number one. Obviously, Williamson was the writer, but the guy who I believe, and I apologize for mispronouncing it, but deserves most of the credit, is Carmine D. Giandomenico. What a hell of a costume. And honestly, in the way it was colored too, I think really contributed to that character sticking, and clearly was enough to get the show to adapt it. And it's just such a cool looking costume. It's not a surprise that character keeps sticking around. So yeah, that was Flash Rebirth number one. It's been a while.
Yes, it has. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about Riverdale Season 4 is now on Netflix, and I'm excited to check it out, but I'll probably wait until after we're done reviewing the season finales of the shows coming out next week. So, all right, well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we've got Batman, The Adventures Continues, number 4. We got Jimmy Olsen, Wonder Woman, and, of course, the season finales of Batwoman, Supergirl, Flash, and Legends Tomorrow. And it'll be interesting to see how each of those shows end. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.